We need each other. We need each other to broaden our vision. We need each other to renew our strength. We do that together in the vessel of this church. Welcome to First Unitarian Church of Albuquerque. I'm Reverend Bob LaValle, and I'm delighted to be joined here today by our senior minister, Angela Herrera, and our music director, Susan Peck, and today's worship leader, Casey Spivey. Our DJ today is Dan Small, and our tech team is Chris Paul, Bill Miller, and Cy Schuster. Vance Bass is the person to contact if you need some tech support, which hopefully you won't. Thank you to all the volunteers for making this happen. Casey will share a couple of announcements.
Good morning, friends. Two announcements. First Unitarian's annual meeting will be happening on the last Sunday in January, January 31st at 2 p.m. on Zoom. Among other things, this is an opportunity for members of the church to vote on our budget for 2021. So please mark your calendars for 2 p.m. and we'll see you then. Now I'd like to share a message from the Radical Generosity Committee. There have been a lot of memes celebrating the end of 2020, but all joking aside, it was a year of unprecedented challenges for our community and our congregation. This year's pledge drive was uncharted territory. We had to do an abrupt about face from a traditional pen and paper pledge to an all virtual format. We couldn't talk to people face to face in worship or at coffee hour. We had all new staff working under challenging safety restrictions. And we knew everyone was struggling with isolation, lost work, illness, fear, and grief. Amidst all of this, it was also a year of unexpected gifts. The many ways the people at First Unitarian reached out to one another and solved hard problems. While some other congregations went into a crisis of both faith and finances, you rose to the challenge with incredible creativity and grace. As of now, we've reached 94% of our budget goal. And while some households weren't able to pledge during this very difficult year, others helped to make up the difference. And our average pledge increased by almost 5%. Thanks to your radical generosity, we're going into 2021 on secure footing, ready to live into our values and meet whatever lies ahead. Last March, Angela told us that our true church exists in the bond between us. That bond is stronger than ever and a blessing for which we are profoundly grateful. Thank you for supporting First Unitarian and helping us all grow in spirit, in service, in love. Thank you.
Let's light our chalices. We kindle this chalice in the spirit of imagination. We ask ourselves, who can we be? What can we see? What will we build and what will we find? Come, let us imagine together.
Good morning. Good morning. I'd like to invite you to join me in our opening hymn. This is from the Gray Hymnal, number 113, Where is Our Holy Church? I've placed the lyrics in the chat bar, and so please join me singing this wonderful humanist hymn from our tradition.
I'm Luciana, and I invite you to do the UU affirmation with me. Here we go. We are Unitarian Universalists. We are people of faith with open minds, loving hearts, and helping hands.
Who will I be? Who will I be? What will I see?
What will I see?
In this great world.
In this great world.
Who could be free?
Who could be free?
And what will I build?
What will I build?
What will I find?
What will I find?
My story begins.
My story begins.
Inside my mind.
Inside my mind.
Who will I be?
Who will I be?
And what will I see?
And what will I see?
In this great world.
In this great world.
Who could be free?
Who could be free?
What will I build?
What will I build?
And what will I find? My story begins.
Story begins.
Inside my mind.
Inside my mind.
In my imagination.
Ooh, my imagination.
What is an imagination? Lucy, do you know what imagination means?
Mm-mm. I think imagination is what helps people create new things all the time. Because you can't create new things if you can't imagine what you want them to be.
That is absolutely true, Jacob. Everything human made was an idea first. You know, one of my favorite imaginers in history was Leonardo da Vinci. I loved that he imagined that human beings could fly hundreds of years before we figured out how to do it. And Dr. King is another great imaginer. His speeches about the dream that he had outlined a vision for how people could live better together in this country. It was all about having that vision first and then finding the words to communicate it. And then being inspired to certain actions that would bring it closer and closer to reality. Do you like to make up stories? When you play with your magnets or when you play with your babies? Mm-hmm. That's using your imagination, thinking of stories and characters who are doing things all inside your mind. It's amazing. We have movies playing in our minds all the time. And it's really important to be the director of our movies, to recognize that we can tell ourselves stories that make us feel good or stories that make us feel bad. And we get to choose which thoughts we have. We just have to practice deciding how we use our imaginations. Can you think of something that maybe doesn't exist yet or that no one has ever seen, but that can make your life better or make the world better for those of us who are sharing it? I would love to know what kind of ideas you have about how the future could be and that you're already starting to imagine and that one day all of us will see. Who will I be?
Who will I be?
And what will I see?
And what will I see?
In this great world.
In this great world.
Who could be free?
Who could be free?
What will I build?
What will I build?
And what will I find?
What will I find?
My story begins.
Story begins
inside my mind,
inside my mind,
in my imagination.
Ooh, my imagination.
Our time of sharing joys and concerns. Few words need to be spoken of these weighty days pressing against our hearts, taking up space in our minds, swirling our energies. Come to the well now to drink, holding presence with one another. May our covenant spirit warm us and be tensile strength for us. Please use the chat bar to share first the joys and then the concerns that you now carry. If you are unable to post in this area, call the church office or mail caring@uuabq.org. We wish to know how we may support you in these times. Follow now the prompt on your screen.
Thank you. Will you join me in prayer? All these loved ones, all these joys, and all of these concerns we lift up to the great powers of healing, renewal, and celebration, which we call by many names. And we pray fervently for our country. With fear and outrage, we witnessed a mob overrun the US Capitol building this week, urged on by anti-democratic lies. After years of police violence and mass arrests at protests against racial injustice, with disgust, we watched as hundreds of right-wing insurrectionists, white supremacists, and vandalizers walked away freely as police stepped aside and our lawmakers were forced to hide. We call out, we lament, we roar at the hypocrisy of it, at the dangerous false patriotism that would tear down our country's greatest quality and its highest promise, our fragile democracy. Not all hope is lost. Perhaps the starkness of what happened was a terrifying gift. It's always darkest before the dawn. At last, across the nation, above the clamor, we hear one word, enough. May it be so. May this be, at last, enough. May there be accountability. May there be clarity. May we as a nation take the better path forward. Something beautiful is trying to happen. May it happen. A broadening of equality, the freedom to thrive, a true reckoning with history, a better future, a peace that is not the absence of conflict, but the presence of justice, equity, and compassion, a true reverence for life. Let it be so. May it be so. May we help to make it so. Amen. And peace be with you.
And also with you. You join me in singing this beautiful response with words by Theodore Parker, a beautiful set of imaginative metaphors for our religion, and music by Tom Benjamin.
Our reading is by the Reverend Mark Morrison Reed. The task of religious community. The central task of religious community is to unveil the bonds that bind each to all. There is a connectedness, a relationship discovered amid the particulars of our own lives and the lives of others. Once felt, it inspires us to act for justice. It is the church that assures us that we are not struggling for justice on our own, but as members of a larger community. The religious community is essential, for alone our vision is too narrow to see all that must be seen. And our strength is too limited to do all that must be done. Together, our vision widens and our strength is renewed.
In 1949, Louise Pembroke and Felix Arnold put an ad in the Albuquerque Journal. Pembroke and Arnold were respectively a teacher and the principal at Grants High School, Grants, New Mexico, west of here, although Louise lived in Albuquerque. The ad was an announcement for a meeting of progressive religious folks to talk about forming a new church. That ad drew more than 30 folks to that meeting. And from that act of religious imagination, First Unitarian Church was born. What is religious imagination? Well, last week, Reverend Angela talked about spiritual imagination, and I'd like to quote her excellent sermon for a moment. She says this about spiritual imagination. When asked what I mean by spirituality, I've often spoke of the part of us that is not made up of parts. And I've said that in the most basic sense, if you are alive and will one day die, and you are capable of contemplating those facts, then you are of a spiritual nature. There's a part of you, which is more than the sum of your parts, that is processing or trying to make sense of your situation. There's one more aspect of spirituality, one that is certainly connected to how we make sense of that situation. It's the belief or experience of being one with, or ultimately part of, something larger than ourselves. That was from Reverend Angela's sermon last week. And I think religious imagination, in turn, is the act of bringing our spiritual imaginations into our lives, acting on our spiritual imaginations by creating ways of living that reflect the messages and values that we form from our spiritual inklings. Now, the truth about spirituality is that it's never complete, never finished, never fully formed. You know, the denomination of the United Church of Christ has a motto, God is still speaking, and it always ends with a comma, not a period. God is still speaking, comma. And that comma is a way of expressing with punctuation a theology that there's still more to learn, still more to be revealed about how to make sense of being alive and knowing that we'll die, what it means to connect to something bigger than ourselves, and so much more. Sometimes I like to start my day by reading from the book, The Centering Moment, by the theologian Howard Thurman. It's a really beautiful book, 90 meditations, the prayers really. And I like Thurman for a lot of reasons, but one of them is that he's really honest about how hard it is to have a good spiritual imagination. It's a recurring theme for him. Here's a good example from his writing. He wrote in this petition that he's saying, We seek forgiveness for the inadequacy of mind and the slowness of heart with which we seek to make articulate the meaning of thy spirit within us. We seek forgiveness for the inadequacy of mind and the slowness of heart to understand the spirit within us. Now, isn't that kind of a relief? You know, when someone who is as spiritually grounded as Howard Thurman is, and he's profoundly or was profoundly grounded, when he's saying it's super hard to be spiritual, it gives us a little break. I, for one, am kind of relieved. But the reason that I'm bringing this up is that it means that our religions are also never fully formed, never complete. So we study texts, we do rituals, we follow the tradition, we sing the songs, and we imagine churches like Pembroke and Arnold did, and we come together in community. We clarify our values and we act on them. We form task forces. We worship together. We teach our children and each other. And we need to think of all these things as acts of religious imagination that are also incomplete, not yet perfected. I'm proud to say that we Unitarian Universalists have a long history of religious imagination. We've always been people who questioned the status quo and imagined a religion that is ever more expansive, ever more life-affirming. There's Margot Adler, the writer, journalist, and high priestess who helped form the Covenant of UU Pagans back in 1988. Through her efforts and the efforts of so many others, people who practice one of the many forms of paganism are finding comfortable spiritual homes within UU churches. And we're all richer for that, whether we travel that path or not. And there's John Luther Adams, who expanded our ideas of the free church and our celebration of theological diversity. And what I mean by that is that he wanted us to embrace our differences as a source of creative tension, something that would keep us from becoming hardened and set in our ways, and that would encourage us to continually grow. And I want to talk to you about a truly amazing group of women who imagined a new Unitarian religion. And they don't get talked about enough. So back in the 1870s, if you were a Unitarian minister, you were a man. And the patriarchy was strong back then. I mean, actually, it's still really strong now, but that's another sermon, I guess. So that started to change in 1875 when Julia Ward Howe convened a women's ministerial conference. 1875, women's ministerial conference. And yes, that's the Julia Ward Howe who wrote the Battle Hymn of the Republic and started Mother's Day. So more and more women were at that time pushing to get into the ministry, just as women were fighting for the right to vote. Now, at that time, being a Unitarian minister meant that you were pretty likely to have a comfortable, privileged life. That is, if you were serving an established church somewhere in the East. At that time, the Midwest was considered the frontier. Still wasn't really the place that it is now. And graduates of fancy seminarians did not want to go to a small town with no high culture to tend to a newly formed church of a small congregation. So the few women who were managing to get ordained or get educated sufficiently to be ministers saw an opportunity. Established churches in the East wouldn't hire women, but a new congregation out on the prairie would be happy to get anyone who could lead their church. And these women were at the time also supported by a minister named Jenkin Lloyd Jones, who was the secretary of the Unitarian Western Conference. That was the part of the, that was the West back then, the Midwest. And Jones was evolved enough to see past gender to talent. And based on that, he recruited Mary Safford and Eleanor Gordon to lead a church in Humboldt, Iowa. Humboldt, Iowa. Tiny little place. So Safford and Gordon were lifelong friends who at a young age made a pledge to work together to promote progressive religion. That is an act of religious imagination. And when they got to Humboldt, Iowa, the congregation did not care that Safford did not have a formal seminary education. She'd educated herself thoroughly, and they voted unanimously to ordain her. Gordon, in turn, got a job as the principal of the local school. And so their work as partners in this community began. And this was a ministry that would end up having a huge impact on churches in the Midwest. Safford eventually became the leader of the Iowa Sisterhood, a group of 21 women ministers who eventually served congregations in Iowa, Illinois, Minnesota, North and South Dakota, places that would not have had Unitarian churches otherwise. And something really special happened in these ministries. These women imagined a new way of being a minister. So at the time, if you were a male minister serving an established church in an established city in the East, your main focus of your work week would be creating original sermons every week. It's all about worship. The other work of the church, providing pastoral care, offering religious education to children and adults, well, that was women's work. And the minister's wife and the children and the women of the congregation attended to that. Well, for the ministers of the Iowa Sisterhood, doing all these things was a combination of necessity and of inclination, an idea of a better way to do ministry. They brought a holistic view to the ministry, understanding that the life of a congregation extends far beyond Sunday mornings. And this practice of being more deeply engaged in the lives of their congregants earned them loyalty, and it helped them to develop a deep understanding of the spiritual needs of the people they were serving. And I believe that because of them, ministry today is a much richer, much more authentic experience, frankly, much more fulfilling because of the Iowa Sisterhood's example. They are the kind of minister that I want to be. Well, Safford recruited women to join her on the frontier, and she would mentor and encourage them. She arranged pulpit swaps and brought famous speakers out to preach at their churches. She really did a lot of amazing work. But despite the special richness of their ministries, these were incredibly challenging places to work. For Safford and Gordon, it wasn't uncommon to work from 6 a.m. until midnight. Now, they had both grown up on farms and understood hard labor, but they were still on the frontier. And during the winter, the labor required to haul water and chop wood in order to simply survive the winter, to not freeze to death, was enormous. For her efforts, Safford was paid $40 a week, half of the minimum of $80 a week that a male minister back east would accept, at minimum, $40. And despite the heroic work that they were doing, back east, the men running the American Unitarian Association, which is the precursor to the Unitarian Universalist Association, the men running the AUA were not supportive. A lot of it was simple sexism. Some of it was a lack of understanding of the conditions of the West. It would have been common sense for the AUA to offer financial support to these new congregations, but that was not the case. And I gotta be honest, in the short run, the story of the Iowa Sisterhood doesn't end well. Many of the women left the ministry early, frustrated by the battles they needed to fight for respect and the lack of support from their larger organization. And as the turn of the century approached, the pendulum swung away from this idea of women as ministers, and arguments were starting to be made again for a more manly ministry, whatever the heck that's supposed to mean. So it was hard for them in the short run. I think it's a cautionary lesson. Sometimes there is a price to be paid for religious imagination. Safford and Gordon and many of the Iowa sisterhood finished their careers with bitterness. Many left the ministry to work for progressive causes like the Settlement House movement or journalism. Thinking of a new way is a threat to the old way, and there can be consequences, or at minimum, resistance. But I will say today, I am proud to share that Unitarian Universalism has more of all their ministers, more than half are women, all UU ministers, more than half are women, and about a third identify as LGBTQ. Proud of where we went, spurred on by the Iowa Sisterhood. That was religious imagination. And going back to the story of religious imagination that led to the founding of First Unitarian Church of Albuquerque, Louise Pembroke and Felix Arnold paid the price as well. Both of them lost their jobs with the Grant School District because of their radical views about progressive religion. Can you imagine that happening in 1950? But Grants was a town that was split between Roman Catholics and Methodists, and neither group looked kindly on the ideas about religion that Pembroke and Arnold were preaching. As I said before, our religion is never formed, never complete, and we here today are called to use our religious imaginations now and always. What can we imagine here in this religion, in this congregation? What can we imagine at First Unitarian Church of Albuquerque? Perhaps we could more deeply become a place where we feel as well as think. Perhaps we could cultivate an ever-expanding sense of hospitality. Perhaps we could foster a willingness to change and be a little uncomfortable. Perhaps we could invite more people into our movement and allow ourselves to be changed by these new perspectives in our pews. Now, these are not meant to be critiques, but invitations. And we need to be bold. Let us remember that before things became the way they are now, other people imagined them first. Other people imagined where we are now first. Imagining is not a frivolous act. It's a powerful, powerful act. And I want to hear from you too. What are your religious imaginings? Please email them to me, or you can just even put them in the chat box. We are in a moment that calls deeply for religious imagination. We just narrowly avoided a coup. There may be another one coming. And we need each other more than ever. And we need a religion that gives us courage and consolation, and that shares its light of reason and love for all. Let's resolve to use our religious imaginations to do that and see what amazing things happen. May it be so.
So now, what offerings might we bring? Our change for the future recipient this quarter is SAGE. SAGE provides support for older LGBT people in the Albuquerque metropolitan area through advocacy, social programs, education, support groups, and resource distribution. They counter isolation, fear, and loneliness by creating a caring community of LGBT elders who will look out for each other. You can make an offering online by clicking on the link that we'll put in the chat box. And if you prefer not to give online, you can always simply mail a check to the church and include Change for the Future in the memo line. Let us now exercise the enduring power of generosity.
All of us are loved. Each of us is welcome. No one is a stranger. No one is an outcast. No one is alone. Everything we do, when our hearts are grateful, makes a better world, one that we can call everybody's home. Juntos por amor, cada quien precioso, nadie es un extraño, nadie es un como una
What is generously given is received with gratitude. Thank you on behalf of the congregation and on behalf of SAGE. We're almost at the end of this formal service now, and if you would like to stay and chat with a small group during our virtual social hour, just stay on the call through the postlude and we will connect you. And for your conversation starter today, if you'd like one, either in those small groups or elsewhere in your world, I echo the question that Reverend Bob ended his sermon with, which is, what do you see next for our church in your religious imagination? What do you see next at First Unitarian in your religious imagination? And Bob and I would love to hear your answers to that question. So please, by all means, feel free to email us during the week and let us know your thoughts. And now Bob will lead us in extinguishing the chalice.
Let's extinguish our chalices. We resolve to continue to create a religion that gives us courage and consolation and shares its light of reason and love for all. Our worship is over. Our service begins. Go in peace, gentle people, and practice radical love.